Inside Crime is brought to you by Deterra. The Deterra drug deactivation pouch provides an easy and effective way to dispose of unused or expired medication. Learn more at deterrasystem.com. Stay safe, stay ready with Deterra.
I'm Angeline Hartman. I've spent my career as a crime reporter, covering some of the most bizarre cases in history. Now, I work at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, helping families seek answers. With this podcast, I'm bringing you more stories. We'll journey together as we learn what happens inside crime. Hi, everyone. I hope you've enjoyed all of our stories about survivors and heroes. We're closing out our season with Officer Lindsay McCall Long. She's a personal friend of mine, and she's both a survivor and a hero. We met many years ago when I was a reporter in Atlanta, and I covered the murder of her famous father. His case is still unsolved, and you'll hear more about that in a future episode of Inside Crime. Today, we're talking about her job as a police officer in Tempe, Arizona, and the day Officer McCall Long and her partner were nearly killed in the line of duty.
I love my job. I get to help people every day. It's fun because you get to come in like your day is different. Every day you show up to work, your day is different. I enjoy being able to put on my uniform and go out and just engage with the public. I mean, I'm a chatty Cathy, as I like to say. And what better job for me than to go out and be able to speak to different people every day? Sometimes those people don't want to speak to me. So I've become very interested over the years in taking different interpersonal communications classes. I've taken a lot of mental health classes because we do have obviously a rising mental health issue, not just in Tempe, but across the United States. And so we do get inundated with more and more of those calls. So I've kind of taken my time and my interest into going on those calls and taking those trainings to learn how to de-escalate situations before they go somewhere we really don't need them to go for the officer or the person you're out dealing with.
It's hard to believe what happened to you was a year ago, October 29th, right?
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
When you tell your story about what happened that day, you say it started before that.
About 9 days prior. Yes.
Let's start there.
On October 20th, 2018, I get a call from a very good girlfriend of mine who I used to work with back at Gwinnett County Police Department, telling me that a young officer had been shot and killed on a call. And just hearing the emotion in her voice just did something to me. And I then reached out to other friends of mine who are still at the department, and they were actively a part of this scene where this officer had been shot and killed. Basically, him and I think another officer were going to go check on a suspicious vehicle call. And before he got a chance really to even make contact with the people, they started shooting at him. And he was hit and did not survive his injuries. Talking to my friends and hearing how upset they were, it tore me up because my way of helping is being there physically for you, and I can't if I'm 1,900 miles away. And so
I should just say, this was a big story when this happened. I mean,
yes.
I follow Metro Atlanta News, mm-hmm. and I remember when this happened. It was so, so awful.
It is. It really is. I mean, his name is Officer Antoine Tony. And he had just turned 30 shortly before this incident happened. And he had about 3 years on, and he is the one who's always wanted to do this job since he was a little boy. And you know, he did not get that second chance. He did not survive his injuries. And it just, I did some what I call emotional cutting, in that, not physically, but I watched the funeral procession. I listened to the last call they put out on the radio.
Attention all units. Southside Officer Antoine DeArvis Tony, badge 1808, will be 1042 for the remainder. Officer Tony was fatally wounded while responding to a report of a suspicious vehicle. Officer Tony, we honor you for your ultimate sacrifice, and we thank you for the service to the Gwinnett County Police Department and to the citizens of Gwinnett County. You will always be remembered for your infectious smile and your way of never hesitating to be there when you were needed. You were doing what you loved most, and for that, we will be forever grateful. Gone but never forgotten, badge 1808, we will take it from here. Officer Tony, end of watch, Saturday, October 20th, 2018.
I felt awful. I felt helpless because I can't be there to hug my friends, to console my friends, and to cry with them. There's a line from the movie Backdraft where he says, if you go, we go. So that's kind of my mentality when I talk about work. And I felt like if my friends were going to have to deal with this emotionally, I too am going to deal with this emotionally.
Because you did not know him personally.
I
did
not.
But of course, you're in the same family.
In the same family. And when I saw his picture, it did something to me. And Gwinnett County has not changed their uniform since I left in 2008. And I, to see his face, I used to wear that uniform. So it just did something to me, seeing this young black officer, me being a black female in law enforcement, and seeing him in the same exact uniform I used to wear. It just, even when I think about it now, it gives me chills. It just, I'm like, that's me when I see his picture.
You know, I will say he connected with a lot of people, whether they're in law enforcement or not.
He did.
He connected with a lot of people in the community. And then when this happened, I think so many people were grieving for him, mm-hmm. and his family.
Yeah, if you watch the funeral procession at all on TV, I mean, the freeway was lined. I mean, it was such a... That was another thing that struck me. It was just a huge community outpour. And people were genuinely shook by what happened to him. You know, it made me think a lot about calls that I've been on and things that have happened to me over my career, and how just a different mindset or a different decision, that could have been me. The Saturday after Officer Tony's passing, I was headed to work and I just broke down crying on my way to work. And I just couldn't stop. My sergeant wasn't at work that day, but another sergeant who I really trust, I felt like I could be open with him. And I cried all over him for like 30 minutes in the parking lot. I didn't even want to go in the building. And from there, he says, you know what? You don't need to be at work today. I want you to go home and I want you to spend time with your family today. And that's what I did. I went home. You know, my mom wanted to talk when I got home. And I said, no, I've cried it out. I've talked it out. I just want to spend time with you guys, because we're always in different places at different times, and it's hard to get everybody together to go do something. So here was my opportunity. We go on to have a nice Saturday. Sunday, I wasn't feeling mentally right to go to work, so I did not. I think it's important that we, especially as law enforcement officers, take the time to take off when we're not mentally present at work, because that could be the difference between life and death oftentimes. Monday, I felt refreshed. I was like, okay, boom, we're going to work. I go to work that day and Officer Tony's still on my mind. And a friend of mine who had been involved in a critical incident a few years back saw me in the hallway. We always check on each other. And she says, hey, Linz, I noticed you haven't been at work the last couple of days. Is everything okay? Which I thought was very sweet of her, and that was very brave of her to ask, because oftentimes in law enforcement, we don't ask each other those questions.
Right, because you're taking care of other people.
Exactly. Right? And you got to be tough. Nothing's wrong. I'm fine. Psh, I'm good. You know, and I, when she asked, I just, you know, we started talking right there in the hallway at my station. And I told her all the same things. I said, I'm angry right now. Like, this isn't right. And the two suspects are young black males. They're 18 and 19 years old. So that's three lives gone right there, right there. And I said, this is all he's ever wanted to do. I have been dodging the proverbial bullet for 15 years. Like, how is this so? And he didn't even get a second chance. So I was very emotional and very angry that morning. And I'm glad she stopped me because I was able to talk through what I was feeling that morning. And we hugged and I went on with my day. And later on, about mid-afternoon, maybe around 2:30 or so, my zone partner, she calls me and says, hey, do you want to go on this call with me to serve this order of protection? An order of protection is what most people know to be a restraining order. And this was an order due to domestic violence. So
yeah, what's the history there? Do we know?
Apparently there was a domestic violence situation that took place between the victim and her boyfriend a few days before. I was like, okay. So we go to the house together to basically to have her let us in because he was not answering the door. And
what do you know at this point that these two live together? And when you serve this, does this say he can no longer, he has to leave, or what is the scenario?
He lives there and he has to leave the premises and he will not be able to come back and he will not be able to contact her anymore.
I understand there's certain things you cannot talk about.
Right.
But what we can talk about, we do know this was inside, correct?
It started inside and yes, and we moved outside.
And just to be clear, you clearly see her and him and you guys have a conversation. Is that correct?
We only had a conversation with the victim. We never got a chance to have a conversation with him. Basically, we get there. She lets us in and we attempt contact with him. And he never said anything to us. And he took a firearm out of his pocket after my partner said, hey, take your hands out of your pockets. And he immediately came out and started shooting.
Inside Crime is brought to you by doTERRA. The doTERRA drug deactivation pouch provides an easy and effective way to get rid of unused or expired medication. The doTERRA pouch makes addictive drugs like opioids unusable in minutes. Just place the medication in the pouch and mix with water. Be a part of America's solution to reduce drug abuse. Learn more at doTERRASystem.com. Stay safe, stay ready with doTERRA.
Basically, we get there, she lets us in, and we attempt contact with him, and he never said anything to us, and he took a firearm out of his pocket after my partner said, hey, take your hands out of your pockets, and he immediately came out and started shooting.
You're inside the house.
Yes.
You talk to the woman,
mm-hmm.
right? And he's not there. All of a sudden, he comes out.
We had already spoken to her outside. So the conversation between my partner and the girlfriend, that did not happen inside of the house. That was outside down the street. And she just let us into the residence because he was not answering the door for the other officer.
Got it.
The girlfriend was not injured in any way. She was able to run out the door. My zone partner was able to return fire and she was able to strike him, which caused him to run the opposite direction from where I fell, which helped me out. Because I mean, no telling what could have happened. And I recently thanked her for basically saving my life because I really feel that's what she did that day. And it's crazy as you're standing there and you can hear the sirens coming for you. You're not the one that's running to the situation. You hear the sirens and they're running to help you out. And so it was just almost like an out of body experience as I'm standing there waiting for another officer to come and meet me. I end up running across the street where another officer met me. And that's kind of where reality started hitting me, sitting there in the grass, that I'd been shot. My partner was struck once and I was struck three times. And it's a very surreal moment, is what I tell people, because for me, my brain is trying to catch up with reality. I'm looking down at my arm. I have a hole in my right arm and it's bleeding. And, you know, I have the auditory exclusion. Like, I can't hear a lot. It's very muffled. And my vision is starting to tunnel in, or what they call tunnel vision. So it's like starting to like close in, almost to the point of, if you can imagine looking through like the center of your paper towel, like the paper towel tube, like it kind of closes in on you like that for a minute, because everything in your body, your body basically goes into survival mode in a high stress situation, and your body's trying to leave, trying to fight. And it's trying to just get to safety. And that's what I was doing. But I'm trying to get on the same page with my body and reality. In the process of me running outside and falling, because when I got hit in the back, I had dropped my firearm, which I did not realize that at the time. So when I go back and watch my body cam footage and I'm watching the clock, when we arrived on scene, it was approximately 2 minutes from the time we were walking up to the house until the shots fired call went out on the radio. So it didn't take long. We were in the house maybe 15 to 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. And so, and the shooting itself is very short. I mean, people don't realize how quickly shootings happen. It was all of 3.5 seconds in which the gunfire took place. Then he comes out and then he starts firing at us. And we move as quickly as we can. You know, all your training kicks in when things like that happen. So that's why, you know, they like when they say, talk about muscle memory, something that you do over and over again so that when it's time to react, you know exactly what to do. It's almost like you're on autopilot. And so all my training kicked in at that point. I mean, even everything I learned going back to Gwinnett County, and I've been with Tempe almost 10 years as of next month. But I mean, going all the way back to Gwinnett County, things kicked in to help me get out of that situation. Same with my partner. Like, your training just kicks in and you know exactly what to do because we've practiced this and we talk about these scenarios often. So when I fell, it knocked the wind out of me, and briefly I thought I was paralyzed because I could not feel my legs. I was up, then I was down. And then I had three distinct thoughts that went through my head. Even though I was not on the ground that long, I would literally fell and popped back up. But I remember thinking three things when I was on the ground. I'm paralyzed. I don't want to look over my shoulder and look up the barrel of a gun. And then I thought about my two kids, who were 1 and 4 at the time. And I use an expletive, but I won't say it on here. But I was like, basically, Lindsay, get up now. Now, get up. So I get up and I take off running. And that's when I realized I didn't have my firearm with me anymore. And my tunnel vision was just so narrowed in, I didn't even realize I was running right past it in the grass. So, like I said, I was out of the game at that point. There's nothing else I could do. And we're both, at this point, officers are on scene everywhere, and we are both extracted from the scene. The suspect was later found a few houses down where he had taken his own life. And as they're loading me up into the car, the pain is kicking in. I think I mentioned my mom twice before the ambulance got there. I remember saying, great, my mom's going to freak out because I just got off the phone with her. So we're waiting on the ambulance to get there, which didn't take long. It just feels like forever when you're in pain. And it was like once we got away from the house, my adrenaline started to decrease and the pain just really kicked in. And boy, my arm hurt so bad. I'm cursing left and right. But then I apologized and everybody's like, you don't have to apologize. And I said, I know, but I'm cursing a lot and I'm in pain and I'm bleeding all over everybody. And they're like, it's all right. It's all right. They get me into the ambulance And I asked for a phone because I was like, I need to call my family right now. So I call my husband, but he didn't answer his phone. I tease him about not answering his phone a lot. And I'm like, this is not the time to not answer your phone. But he works nights, so I'll give him a pass.
Yeah.
And I called my brother. I said, hey, I just want to let you know, I just got shot on duty. I'm okay. I'm headed to the hospital. And his first question was, who shot you? And I said, does it matter? Did you hear what I said? And he says, yes. He says, did you call your mother yet? And we say your mother. We have the same mother, but we say your mother. And I said, no, that is your job, sir. I'm not making that phone call. So
there you go, brother.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm the older one. He's the younger one. So he has to do what I say. Mm-hmm. But I then called my husband again. He answered that time. I told him the same thing. I gave him a minute to wake up and really process what I was saying. And I said, I'm headed to the hospital right now. Just get there. And it's just a chaotic scene at the hospital because, I mean, there were so many of our officers at the hospital already, even our command staff, meaning our chief, assistant chiefs, commanders were at the hospital already. People are running around everywhere. They're snatching stuff off of you. And
because we're and this is two officers shot.
Correct.
Correct.
Correct. So I was shot in my right forearm, which broke the radius bone in my arm. And I was shot in my upper left arm close to my shoulder. And that was a through and through injury. I actually didn't even feel it. I had to be shown the bullet holes in my arm. I never felt it. And then I got hit in the back as well. And that bullet was caught by my vest. And that's the one that knocked me off my feet because it was right over my kidneys. So if you know anything about boxing, if you get hit in the kidney, it'll buckle your legs, which made sense to me after I found out where I was hit, because my legs were there and then they weren't. Like they were jello and I couldn't feel them. And that's why I thought I was paralyzed for a second. My partner was shot in her right bicep. It went in her right bicep and it came out of her shoulder. It did not hit anything major for her. And she was actually released from the hospital before I even went into surgery to repair my right arm that night. I remember telling my husband when I got to the hospital, like, I was trying to do my hypnobirthing relaxations and it just was not working. I was trying to deal with the pain and it didn't work the way I wanted to. And he looks at me and he says, baby, your body is made to have babies. It's not made to get shot. And I was like, huh, true story, husband. You're right this time. This is the only time you're right. So just seeing my family's faces when they...
But I do notice that you compare giving birth to getting shot. What? Well, the pain level just FYI.
Well, I tell people, having a baby, yes, there will be pain because a human is coming out of another human. But the difference is you're going to get a cute little bundle of joy after that. Me, I got 6 screws and a rod in my arm. And you don't get that rush of hormones, you know, oxytocin and endorphins after you have a baby, you know. But I was trying to manage the pain with what I knew from childbirth. So in that way, they are similar. And I always mention that because it just, I tried to put myself in another place because my arm just hurt. It took over everything. I mean, my hair hurt. That's how bad my arm hurt. And once we got to the hospital, you know, my family comes and my husband comes, and just the look on his face when he came around the corner was, it's etched in my head. But once he saw that I was okay and that I was talking and nothing critical was going on with me, he relaxed. My brother then came in. We had a serious moment for once. And when he saw me and he came and he held my hand, and the first thing he asked me was, do you have unclean underwear? And I'm like, what? Yes. Yes, they're clean. But that's a joke in our family where my grandmother used to tell my mom and her siblings, you better have unclean underwear, because if you go to the hospital and you have on dirty underwear, I will not claim you. I will leave you there. So that's kind of our family joke. So I'm waiting for my mom, and I keep asking my brother, like, where's your mother? Where's your mother? Well, she gets in, you know, and there's a sea of officers, which I can't imagine coming into a hospital where a loved one has been shot or injured, a major injury, and seeing a sea of police officers. Because in every movie, when you see a sea of police officers, it's bad. Like, it's really, really bad. Mm-hmm. So she comes around the corner, and somehow there was some miscommunication, and they thought I just wanted my husband in with me. And this is right before my brother walked in. And I'm like, no, we need to correct that. And once I found out, I said, no, you got to go find my mom. Well, by this point, my mom's trying to push past the officers, and they're like, ma'am, you can't go in there. And my mom is like, that's my child in there. Like, I gave birth to her. Like, you can't tell me that. And she pushes, like, impact pushes one of the commanders, who's not a small guy. And she's like, I'm going to go see my baby. So she assaults an officer in the hospital, which is nice. But that's her. And unfortunately, she passed out. She fainted. You know?
Oh, gosh.
And she fainted. And that's what was taking her so long, because she hit her head on the wall. And they had to take her to go get a CT scan, which is crazy, because I'm like, where's your mother? And here she comes in a wheelchair. And I thought it was just because of her knees, because she's had her knees replaced, and just being upset, you know?
Right.
That's what I thought. And she's like, no, I have a concussion. I'm like, what? what just happened here? So, you know, so everybody's by my bedside at this point. And then it's just waiting to go have surgery. After that. And like I said, they repaired my arm, and I have a rod and six screws in my arm, and I lost some muscle in my right forearm as well.
And you are still dealing with this injury today, correct?
I am. I am back to work on light duty as of July. I'm working with our crime prevention unit right now. I've had a total of 3 surgeries on my arm, and I'm having a 4th surgery next month. I don't have full range of motion of my arm, and some pain that I'm still dealing with in my right forearm.
You know, just hearing you tell the story, I'm sure it's taken a while to be able to talk through that, you know, like when it first happened.
It takes a minute, because the first few months, it was very surreal. I'd say it took me like the first 3 months I was home to feel like, oh, okay, this really happened. This is not a dream. I'm not going to wake up from this. This really happened. And I do get emotional when I talk about my kids, the part when I said, you know, when I fell on the ground and I thought about my kids, because I remember thinking like, I'm going home today. I have to go home. I have 2 kids. Nobody is going to tell my 4-year-old that, you know, mommy's not coming home again. Like, I cannot have that. And so that's tough even to think about now. I know it didn't, but that could have happened. And those feelings kind of, they creep up on me from time to time, to be honest. And when I often get emotional when I tell that story, when I'm talking about Officer Tony, because it's just, you know, like I said, it's not fair. And here I am. I got a second chance and he did not. So, you know, I get this mix of emotions. I'm sad. I'm angry. I'm blah sometimes about things. It kind of comes and goes. But the thing that's helped me the most is having a great support system.
So how are you doing now? What are the tough days like?
Some days, on my bad days, I don't want to do anything. I don't want to get out of bed. I just don't want to do anything. I just want to lay in bed and I just want to cry. And I want to close the curtains. I don't want any phone calls. I don't want any of that. I don't even want to be bothered by my husband. And sometimes I don't want to be bothered by my kids, which that's the part that hurts me right there, is when I'm in those moods where I don't want to be bothered by my own kids, like the people that I gave birth to. So when I'm having a bad day like that, I make sure to check in with people.
Right. And these are the things, this the people don't realize, they think, you know, well, she was shot last year and she's doing better, you know, and but things go on.
Yes.
A year later, you're still dealing with the injuries. You're still dealing with the after effects. And it's not just the physical. It's
right.
Emotional.
Big time. I mean, I still see a therapist. So my therapist has been a great help to me. I mean, a great, great help to me. My husband and I went to a retreat for first responders called ERAP, Emergency Response Assistance Program. And they had a retreat here in Arizona that I got invited to. They encouraged spouses and significant others to attend. And it was good. It was a 3-day retreat. It was emotionally exhausting sometimes, but it was a safe place where you can get things out. You really get down to the nitty gritty of what officers see and deal with every day at work, and how we don't always take the best avenues to make ourselves feel better.
So out of all of this, what is your main message to people? What is it you want people to know from this experience of yours?
I want people to know that even when things seem crappy, even when things make you feel like you can't and you don't want to do anything or go on, that you can. We as law enforcement, we have to be comfortable with asking for that help. At the end of the day, we are human beings, and we will react like human beings because we see a lot that everyday people do not see. And your body and your brain can only take so much of that before you hit that breaking point. Nobody is going to judge you if you ask for help. If they do, shame on them. In a 20 to 25 year career, depending on where you work, that critical incident can happen to you.
Yeah, it's a very important message. I'm sure you've heard it before. They, you know, people must call you a hero.
I've heard people say hero from time to time, and I don't feel like a hero, to tell you the truth, but it always makes me feel good when people thank me for my service.
Well, you are definitely an inspiration for all of us. And, you know, keep spreading your message because it is so important, Lindsay. And I could not be prouder of you.
Well, thank you.
And that's it for this season of Survivors and Heroes on Inside Crime. If you have a case or a story suggestion, just go to our website, insidecrime.com, and send me an email. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. I'm your host, Angeline Hartman. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode of Inside Crime.